Harriet leads a trip through history of dance. With a background of the famous Norwich man John Playford, who published the first book on dances, and with links to the Noveres family, it's no surprise that the Norwich Historic Dance Society is still going strong today. From the 15th century stepping to the First World War, Harriet leads us a merry dance through the music, the dance steps and the costumes, and much, much more. Carolyn met her to find out more.
Harriet, thank you very much for taking the time this afternoon to talk about your involvement with the Norwich Historical Dance Society.
That's a pleasure to talk about it.
How did you initially get involved in historical dancing?
Well, I think it was university where I was doing folk dancing, and there was this mysterious extra thing called Playford dancing, which was more English traditional country dancing. And I loved it, all the patterns that you could make. They sort of a bit more interesting and exciting than the other folk dancing, I thought. So I carried that on in London when I lived there. And when we moved to Norwich, 30 years ago or so, I was thrilled to discover that, very unusually, there was a weekly historical dance class just around the corner, the local primary school. So I leapt at the chance to join that, and I've been there ever since. Because it's quite unusual to have a weekly class in just doing historical dance. It's fantastic.
And dances right from the medieval 15th century?
15th century mostly, because that's when the first choreographies survived from. They were Italian. Right up to, we have done a performance right up to First World War. So that's quite a range, and not many groups cover that breadth, actually. So we're quite unusual. Does mean I have to have a lot of costumes.
And what's your favourite era?
Oh, whichever one I'm next performing, I think. Don't have a favourite era. They're all lovely. They've all got something special, definitely. Each one is just... And the music is partly what got me into it as well in the first place, because having learnt music as a child, you know, you start playing little minuets on the piano and things, and waltzes, and then you discover we know how to actually dance them. I hadn't realised until I was an adult that we knew how these were danced. So that's fantastic, and it just gives a whole other side to
and originally music. These dances were passed on verbally and in practice.
Yes, and dancing masters got in on the act very early, actually. So right from the 15th century in Italy, there were dancing masters writing them down, and that carried on. But in this country, slightly less regularly, but I think we took the influence of Italy. Italy was considered the place after in the Renaissance, Italian art,
courts.
Music, yes, all the court stuff. And that was being done by courtiers, of course. So initially it was mostly just courtiers, probably. And for families in the big houses around the country, they were dancing as well, a lot. And we can take evidence from paintings and sort of the occasional writing. But the first really important publication that we've got from this country was written by a Norwich man, which, again, when I discovered that, I just went, oh, isn't that just fantastic? There was a Norwich man. He was called John Playford. And he actually, we don't know much about his early life at all, except that he was born locally. But he moved to London, which I dare say a lot of young men did. And he was probably apprenticed to a publisher. He certainly became a publisher, and he was a musician. And during the Commonwealth, when Cromwell was sort of putting a downer on most fun, he actually published a book of dances, which is amazing. And it was called The English Dancing Master, and it has been in publication ever since. I mean, it's amazing.
And we're looking at the 17th century here.
Yes, right? So during Cromwell's time, and when the Restoration, when Charles II was restored to the throne in the later 17th century, these dances were still being done, and the book went into 18 editions, So long after John Playford himself had died, his son took it on and so on. And they were still being danced. So, right up through the 18th century.
Do you know what brought him to Norwich?
He was born in Norwich. I mean, he was presumably just I don't know what his father did. I don't know that, but he was just... his main publication and life for them was based in London. But and what made him decide to put the dances together? We don't know, but it's fascinating. And a lot of the traditional dances that people might have done at school, like gathering peace gods, was in, you know, this is a Playford dance originally.
So this remains as your kind of historical dance Bible?
One of them, certainly, yes. And there are lots of lovely, particularly in this first edition, there are very interesting dances. And the music is lovely too. And he wrote the music alongside. So we know not only the steps, but we have the music. And that actually is really important and, again, quite unusual for historical purposes. So that's lovely.
And the 18th century, I think, is particularly significant
Yes, that's right, because you had the middle classes were growing in importance and affluence and influence around the whole country, and you get more and more, I'm sure dancing masters were making a mint by then, you know, they were more and more important. Every young lady, every young gentleman needed to know how to dance because you were going to balls and you were going to... you could think of a bit of a cattle market, I suppose. But in fact, there's a lovely description of a Norfolk young lady who was visiting somebody in King's Lynn. And she said, we had to go to this ball. And we sat on one side of the room. All the girls were on one side of the room. And the floor was covered with this sort of green matting. And it had holes in it. And the boys sat on the other side of the room. And would they get up to ask us to dance? No. And I thought, well, that's interesting, isn't it? Nothing has changed. So, yes. So, definitely, dancing masters were very important. They were teaching dances. And all through the 18th century. And, of course, our assembly balls. They had balls when there were the... assizes in Norwich and the right season in Norwich, they'd have had balls. And if you had a ball, you had to know how to dance. And so you got your dancing masters. And the most important dancing master that we sort of remember now, I mean, we've looked into history and we've found lots of other dancing masters, but the most famous one is probably the Nevers family, because they gave their name to... it was the Nevers Cinema, wasn't it, at the Assembly House? But there's also, we've got the Nevers Room and things there still. And the Nevers became a very influential family in Norwich. I mean, they were strangers in a way, you know, some of our Norwich strangers, because they were originally Swiss. The original Nevers, Jean Georges, he'd come over to England to dance for David Garrick, the 18th century actor at his theatre. Although he was Swiss, he was with a French dance company. And he's very important in the history of ballet. And they danced for Garrick in his theatre in London. And where it's quite exciting is that his nephew got into trouble on stage during a performance because there was a bit of anti-French feeling at the time. You can guess the... revolution and all that sort of thing. And some of the audience came up on the stage and pulled down all the staging, the wings and stuff. And Nevers had a battle with one of them, and he put his sword through him. And it was assumed he'd murdered him. So he escaped and he came to Norwich. We don't know why he thought Norwich was a good place to hide, but he thought it was far enough away from London to hide. So he discovered Norwich and stayed here for a while. And then eventually he set up his son as a dancing master here. He must have liked it. And then on, the Nevers became a famous family in Norwich and did a lot. They partly set up the Norwich Union. And they was influential in that. And also things like the festival the Norfolk and Norwich Festival, they were important in, set up the Norwich Philharmonic, our orchestra and choir. So they were a really important, influential family for Norwich and
culturally,
done a lot of good.
It must have been a really exciting time
in
Norwich.
Yes, it must. Yes, a real outburst of sort of cultural things happening. Yes, so we have a lot to thank the Nevers for, actually. And the Assembly House is still set up like as it was then for the assemblies. So you had a room for dancing, a room for supper, which often came ever so late. They were dancing. There are descriptions of dance balls going on to breakfast. So they'd dance all night. They'd have a supper about midnight or something like that, and then they'd dance again. I think, oh, the stamina. But I suppose they were all very young. And if you were a leisured class, of course, you could go back to bed and you just get up when you felt like it, couldn't you? So I don't suppose time mattered very much.
So the music room, that's a room I'm familiar with in
Perth. Yes.
Was that the ballroom?
I think that was the ballroom.
Originally.
Yes, yes. And we don't dance in there now. They put carpet down at one point. but we dance in the ballroom, the separate ballroom, which has a plaque. On the outside of it, there is a plaque, a stone inscription dedicated to Nevers. And there are also a couple of plaques to the Nevers in St. Stephen's Church next door. So they were obviously important in that part of Norwich.
And you also dances from later periods into the Edwardian era.
We have done, yes. We will dance if a company or somebody asks us to perform a certain era or a certain sort of theme, then we try to oblige. So, and we use real live music when we can as well. So we prepared this particular one I'm thinking of when it was the anniversary of the First World War. You wouldn't think that was sort of celebratory for dancing or anything, but we made it a sort of commemoration and looked at the different influences in the Edwardian period. And so there was, we did sort of traditional, they were still doing like servants' balls, where they would still be doing some country dances. The Lancers was always popular, sort of the quadrille, the old quadrilles from Victorian times were still being done. But there was also this new fancy stuff coming from the States and abroad, like the tango and ragtime was just beginning to get influential. The First World War rather put a stop to all of that, sadly, but it sort of revived in the 20s, didn't it, with Charleston and all that. So, and it's moved on from then. But, so it was definitely just beginning to get exciting in the Edwardian times.
Oh, you dance in costume?
We perform in costume, yes. So I've got quite a few. We have members of the group who are excellent sewers and have made our costumes for us. And we try to be as authentic as possible, right from hair. You know, we try to do, because it's one thing putting a frock on, but you've got to do everything. You've got to try and get the jewellery right, the makeup not too modern looking, and headdresses, whatever, jewellery, accurate. The only thing that probably isn't accurate is that we dance in our dance shoes because, well, you know, that dancing to me, I've got to wear my proper dance shoes. But I've got costumes right from 15th century style to an Edwardian dress, and we've got the underpinnings as well are important to get the right shape. So I've got an 18th century style corset or stays, which, it certainly puts you in place, you know. It's quite, you have to learn how to breathe because you're still going to be jumping up and down. Mm-hmm. And I've got a Victorian corset because the shape, your body shape, it became different fashions, didn't it, for women. And the men have some lovely, really lovely coats and those lovely 18th century waistcoats that they had. They all dress up as well.
Which are the most restrictive in terms of dress?
I would say, the 18th century. Yes, because it was so fussy by then. You were wearing stays so that you can't breathe very well, and you tie it in as tightly as possible at the waist. Then we also have pads to give us extra bulk around the hips. They might have had panniers as well, sort of coming out sideways, but we don't bother with those because they were off. You started off at a ball with those, and you did your minuet in as large a gown as you possibly could afford, I should imagine, because, of course, the more you have of underpinning, the more fabric you'll need on the outside. But then for the country dancing, came after all the minuets, which were very slow and steady and stately, you were asked to remove, the ladies were asked to remove their panniers. So the cloakroom must have been full of wired undergarments, which is very odd to us now, isn't it,
of course.
But that was so that they weren't so wide and they could romp about more, and there'd be more dancers probably on the floor for a country dance, because a minuet you only had one couple at a time. This is why the dancing master was so important, because you had to show off. It must have been terrifying, actually, and particularly if you knew you weren't very good, because it was one man, one woman, and everybody else would be sitting there going, behind their fans, going, don't think much of her. Ooh, look at his style. Ooh, I'm not going to marry him. He can't dance for toffee. You know, it was important. So, yeah, we've rather lost any idea, haven't we, now, of what it meant to be able to dance. Mm. It was an important accomplishment.
And we now have freedom of to wear what we like.
Yes. Yes.
We're not constricted in any way at all.
No.
So one being the most constricted, which is the most comfortable period?
The lightest is the Regency, and the easiest to get on.
With the little tuck.
Just empire. Your empire line for a woman. Actually, the men, that's not the easiest and most comfortable. I would say for a gentleman, that's pretty hot and very uncomfortable, because they were still wearing those stocks that Beau Brummel had brought in Bath, where your neck is sort of almost stretched. Mm. Very, very high, stiff collar and cravat, which you've got to wear properly. And then you would have not only your shirt, but a waistcoat and a coat on top. So dancing, that is pretty hot. I've seen some young gentlemen get pretty sweaty in those. But for a lady, they're lovely, because you're wearing a very light gown, still corseted. They were still wearing corsets, but they were a slightly different sort. We haven't got them, but they were sort of thrusting the bust up. And then you were looking underneath, so as slim as possible, but very light gowns. The only thing that makes me hot in that is the gloves, because you always wore gloves.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, in the 18th century as well, although we don't often see that, gloves were worn a lot all the time. Partly because it was partly hygiene, and if you're going to kiss your hand, what's that?
Do you,
So gloves were worn more than we think.